Hello and welcome back to Techonomics. I'm your host, Jason Middleton. Fake news, disinformation, Russia, politics, scandal. All of these seem to be staying in the news. Now, if you carve the politics out of it, though, just how effective is a program of disinformation? And when does it veer back into being propaganda? In this next segment, we complete our chat with Vera Zockham. She specializes in influence and information operations, as well as hybrid warfare. That means disinformation campaigns, among others. What's the motivation for fake news campaigns? It can vary from a simple cash grab to sowing the seeds of political instability elsewhere. And finally, how can tech companies help solve this epidemic? Let's get back into my chat with Vera Zockham, a national security analyst. Well, you mentioned the Macedonian teenager and, of course, right. those leaks, too. Any other ones that stood out to you as a researcher coming up onto the 2016 presidential election that stood out? Maybe there aren't. I don't know. But
yeah, I think we saw a couple of things. I mean, certainly there were, when you talk about the Macedonian teenager, there were certainly instances in Georgia. There were folks, because, again, you're talking about disenfranchised populations where the economy is very weak.
Yes.
Poverty is rampant, and they were genuinely wanted to make the extra dollar.
Right.
And when they realized they could make that extra dollar very quick, that disseminated. But then when you have adversaries like Russia, where you have RT, Russian television, Sputnik, they have trolls that they troll on social media as well as on the radio,
yes.
You know, in the blogs and blogosphere. Those are state entities as well as non-state actors. Let's not forget our non-state actors who had political motives to spread disinformation during the election. I mean, and certainly
right.
we saw that potentially with Russia.
Is there a line between disinformation and propaganda?
To me, there is very little line. I mean, disinformation, because disinformation is pretty broad, or disinformation is pretty broad because it depends on the motive, right? Whether it's a political motive, if it's economic motive. What is the motive of the actor that is actually using disinformation as a tactic and a tool? Propaganda, in my mind, is a political motive.
Okay.
So that's how I would differentiate. But at the end of the day, because when you're dealing with even some state actors that have political motives, there's also an economic component as well.
Okay. Let's pivot back to our exposure to all this data that we get every day in our lives, right?
Right.
There's a lot of opportunity to opt in. A lot of people don't opt out of a lot of these opportunities, right? So are there any like immediate, almost defensive actions that people can take? Now, you mentioned a lack of critical thinking. That has been happening for decades, I'm sure.
Yes.
I think we could all argue that an increase in critical thinking would benefit everybody involved, but we're not going to get there. That's utopic to think.
That is utopic to think.
Correct. So are there defensive actions maybe we can help educate me so that I don't get suckered into clicking on a couple of these things here and there?
Sure. I mean, there's a couple of things. So I'll just talk about sort of broader ones that we can do in terms of a society, government, and certain, and as well as I'll talk a few in terms of the users, from
oh, good.
The user perspective.
Okay. We'll go macro and micro.
Macro and micro, as well as perhaps the technology sector might be interested in implementing some. So at the strategic level, there certainly is a result, I would argue, say the fact that our election illuminated all of this, is that there seriously needs to be more emphasis on literacy programs.
Okay. Just
literacy
subject verb agreement.
Yeah, but literacy programs in the U.S. and around the world, and also just and also professional journalism, get into the mindset for, you know, from mm-hmm. the media and the journalistic profession, get into the mindset, how do you not just write something that may or may not be true or false? And how do you ensure that you don't just copy and paste information and actually fact check your data?
Right. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of, you know, people focus on and the developing nations, right?
Right.
That there needs to be more literacy programs. But I think our election certainly highlighted the fact that we need literacy programs in the West as well.
Leave it at news consumers need to be a little more proactive in how
yes,
they get their stuff.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then the other piece I want to talk about is messaging and creating narratives, positive narratives. It is very easy for us as government, as industry, as tech institutions, as society, to really, once something, we're a reactive society. So once something happens, we tend to react. So instead, maybe one of the things we could do, generally speaking, is actually be a little bit proactive and try to create positive narratives as part of a few, I would call it a preemptive strategy.
I see.
So some of it is you can do that with messaging and with narratives, but actually the other piece about that is actually going after and figuring out what is actually happening on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, let's go back to our Macedonia example. I mentioned poverty is right. One of the factors there.
Major motive.
Major motive, right? So perhaps us working with the government of Macedonia in addressing some of those root causes that may, the next time around, that teenager may have other outlets instead of just spreading fake news.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then, you know, I do want to talk a little bit about what the tech community can do in terms of from social media.
We'll take any input we can get.
In cyber. So certainly on the cyber front, you know, when leaks occur, it is important to point out and illuminate them to the public. When a particular actor, be if it's an individual or an adversary, you know, whether you have someone like China or Russia, is using disinformation or propaganda before actually taking direct action. Sometimes bring it to the degree that you can, bring it out to the front is really important, because what that does is humiliation.
So let some sunshine on that.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. You know, we talked about monitoring and enforcing policy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a number of companies now, in light of the fake news phenomenon and people feeling kind of victims of this phenomenon, a number of companies have taken action. One, of course, is Facebook. Google has Snapchat. And very interestingly, I don't know if you heard, with Tim Cook, Apple CEO was in Europe last week,
mm-hmm.
and he said that fake news is a big problem in a lot of the world, and he actually called for a public service announcement campaign.
Oh, wow.
But one that will take a lot of will. And I think that's really important.
Right.
Because it has to be from industry. We are consumers, right? And we're the users of a lot of this information, but the technology sector and the social media, anyone that's in the publishing business and the news business and the social media business have a role to play as well. And part of that is enforcement, right?
Yes, absolutely. You know, we have a lot of smart people. Let's put them in a room and see what they can come up with when it comes to a policy like this.
Yeah. And then the other thing I would mention is, as part of the enforcement and making sure you're getting publishers and data news that is verified,
right,
that you're actually putting on your platform, I think it's really important to partner with news and media organizations for the tech sector. So for Apple, for Facebook,
I see,
for Google, to partner with.
That's intriguing.
You know, to partner so they understand how they actually get their news, how information is corroborated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to have that partnership, so you will have higher chance of actually getting more truthful stuff out there.
Vera, thank you so much for coming in. Quite illuminating stuff.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
That was Vera Zockham. Vera is a research scientist with CNA's Center for Stability and Development. That's a research organization charged with analyzing national security and public policy problems. We have links to Vera's recent op-ed piece, as well as the CNA Center for Stability and Development. Those are at facebook.com/techonomicsradio. Finally this week, Snapchat and parent company Snap filed the S-1 to IPO. I took a look at that and came away with just a couple of quick things. Snap's S-1 filing looks a little bit like Twitter's, especially in one area of concern: the revenue per user. Twitter spends $1.24 per user for every dollar it makes in revenue. Snap right now is actually a little worse than that, but it is in growth mode. In fairness, Snap did lower its target share price to $14 to $16 a share. That's a valuation for Snapchat of about $22 billion, the biggest since Alibaba's IPO. The other thing was the corporate guidance section of the S-1. Now, that's where Snap describes its way forward toward those quarterly earnings that investors will be demanding. Usually, that guidance reads like a conservative version of a moat scenario. That's where the castle is the company, and there are several barriers between the castle and any potential threats to the company. Not for Snapchat. Here's part of the S-1. Quote, "In a world where anyone can distribute products instantly and provide them for free, the best way to compete is by innovating to create the most engaging products, end quote. Now, that's almost slippery, but it does speak to the reality of today's business world. Amazon has proven that distribution costs can be subsumed. Social networks have proven customers want one-to-one relationships with companies and brands. And new, fast, and fun, well, that's a business strategy. Or as the financial blog Strategery calls it, the gingerbread man strategy. Run, run, run as fast as you can. You'll never catch me. I'm the gingerbread man. Well, that's going to do it for this week's edition of Techonomics. We had fun. We hope you did too. Catch us for links and a weekly playlist of the music we use at facebook.com/Techonomics Radio. We're also podcasting like a boss. That's on iTunes and Stitcher. And you can follow me at KGO Jason on Twitter. For producer Liana Wilcox and executive producer Mike Anthony, I'm Jason Middleton. This has been Techonomics. Have great weeks, everybody.